over a year by her family. They've had consular visits, and the consular has not even seen her face yet. So we don't, there are concerns as to whether she's even alive, and if she is alive, in what the state of her health is. And so one of the things I'm asking at the press conference, I want the Pakistani government to send a letter to the American government asking for an independent medical evaluation of Afia
Stephen
to make
Downs,
sure that she's alive and in good health.
We have to wrap,
and
but we're going to continue this interview.
The idea of somehow
we're
repatriating Afia to Pakistan, where she really belongs.
I want to thank you for being with us, and we're going to continue this interview to explain her case and post it online at democracynow.org. Stephen Downs, Lyric R. Cabral, and David Felix Sutcliffe, thank you so much for being with us. Their film is Terror. You should see it. And Marlene, thank you so much for being with us, mother of Tariq Shah. I'm Amy Goodman. This is democracynow.org.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is more talk radio with our hosts Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott. Today's guests are recipients of the 2015 Greenfield Peace Writing Scholarship, granted by Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility.
Portland school board elections are May 19th. What's your question?
I'm Jason Renault, a community activist and the parent of a school-aged child. My question is, tell me your vision for schools in the year 2025.
Tune in to KBOO April 27th through 30th at 5:45 for special school board election coverage.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 6th Annual Abortion Access Bowl-a-thon on Sunday, April 25th at 4 p.m. at Interstate Lanes in Portland. 12 registered bowl-a-thon teams will be bowling to raise funds for the Network for Reproductive Options Abortion Fund to help make reproductive rights a reality for those who can't afford to pay for an abortion. Again, that's the Abortion Access Bowl-a-thon, Saturday, April 25th. 4 to 6 p.m. at Interstate Lanes, 6049 North Interstate in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
We bowl away our daily cares with little strikes and little spares.
Oh, I've got a home, I'm just rambling around.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Portland Renters Assembly, happening Tuesday the 21st from 5:30 to 7:45 p.m. at the Central Library in downtown Portland, and Sunday the 26th from 1 to 3 p.m. at the North Portland Library. The Portland Renters Assembly is a gathering of people united by the burden of rent and committed to housing as a human right. There'll be a chance for individuals to tell their stories about skyrocketing rents, no-cause evictions, dubious fees, and other kinds of exploitation carried out in the name of rent. There'll be childcare, snacks, and a chance to get connected to resources for moving forward together. For more information about the Portland Renters Assembly, go to kboo.fm and click on the right side for community events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO, your community radio station, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, in Corvallis, 104.3, and via the World Wide Web, it is kboo.fm. This is More Talk Radio. Today is Monday, April 20th, 2015. My name is Cecil Prescott, and I am glad that you are joining us this morning. This morning, we are very excited to continue our conversation on peace that we began last week. Last week, we spoke about what some adults are doing to further the cause of peace. And this week, we will talk about what youth and young adults are doing. We'll focus on the 2015 Greenfield Peace Writing Scholarship, which is sponsored by the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. And we have with us a couple of guests, and hopefully we'll have some more come joining us in a little bit. But let me give you our phone number so you can give us a call later on, not right now, as we speak with our guests. Our phone numbers are 503-231-8187, or you may email us at moretalkradio@gmail.com. And joining us this morning are Josiah Taylor, who is a recipient, one of the winners of the writing contest, and Mimi Bernal Graves, who is the treasurer of Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility and was also the lead judge. So thank you two for joining us this morning.
Hi there. Thank you.
And I'm really pleased that you're able to come here. And maybe we'll begin with Mimi. You can tell us a little bit about the organization and the contest itself.
Absolutely. So Oregon PSR, our mission is to take the public health perspective on the gravest threats to mankind. So examples of that are Peace Group, which this essay contest is from, and we have environmental work groups and abolishment of nuclear weapons, and we do a lot of work in the community here in Oregon, and in partnership also with Washington PSR as well, international organization. So I'm very proud to be part of this group. I've been on the board for, I think, 7 years now, and I'm very honored that I was able to participate as a judge in this year's competition. My master's degree is in education, and so when I saw this quote that the Peace Group had chosen for this year, and Malala Yousaf, her quote for this year to inspire folks was, "One child, one teacher, one pen, and one book can change the world. Education is the only solution, education first." And we opened it up to youth and asked, what role can education play in a more peaceful and just world? And we had over 200 entries this year, and they were absolutely inspiring and amazing. So I'm very honored to be here with one of our winners today and share with everybody what folks did.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit more about the origins of this writing contest, the Greenfield writing contest, and how do you get and who's invited to participate in this essay writing contest?
So we've been doing the Greenfield Peace Writing Scholarship for several years, and it's made possible by the donations of our members, and one key member in particular, and I'm not going to name names, but if you come to the event on Friday the 24th at 6 p.m. at EcoTrust, which is open to the public, you can meet our winners and people who support this cause, and we're able to give scholarships. And this is actually headed up by our peace work group. So within the organization, we have several different work groups, as I mentioned previously. And our peace work group every year comes up with a topic for that year, and we open it up to juniors and seniors in Oregon, at Oregon schools. And people can write narratives, essays, research papers, any way they want to answer the question posed for that year. So
excellent. Yeah. And so you mentioned you had like over 200 entries. That seems amazing. Why do you think so many people enter this contest this year?
I think this was the most entries we've ever had, and I think it's for several reasons. We have partnerships, I think, in the community. People are more aware, and when I say that, I mean educators, teachers in our school systems are more aware that this contest is happening. But I think one of the biggest reasons is Malala, her story is absolutely incredible. And she's the age of the people, you know, our youth who are writing in about this contest. And her story is just so inspiring. You know, she's been in the news for winning the Nobel Peace Prize last year. So I think people are a little more familiar, and they're a little more able to be in touch. Sometimes, you know, we choose Gandhi. And in this morning, talking to Josiah, we were talking about, you know, how Gandhi although he's incredible and there's all these figures that are incredible, somebody who's alive and tangible and inspiring for the generation now is just so powerful. And I think that's part of the reason we got the response we did.
Excellent. Well, let's talk to some of the recipients of the award, and Chelsea Lin has also joined us. But let's, while Chelsea settles in, let's go to Josiah first.
Right.
And tell us first something about you. Where do you go to school?
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, I live in Portland. I go to school at Trillium Charter School in North Portland. And, you know, I'm a junior. I just live life as a student. I want to be a writer when I grow up, so I spend most of my time doing that, and that's pretty much me.
And what? Why did you enter the contest this year, or how did you hear about it first?
Well, I was doing an internship as part of my junior year, and my mediator, basically, for the internship gave me a notice for the essay, but I really, you know, liked the contest and what the Greenfield Peace Group was about, you know, so I... You know, I was really supportive of it, and I enjoyed writing the essay, so I think it worked out.
It did, for you. Very good. And Chelsea, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Great. Tell us something about you. Where do you go to school, and why did you enter this contest?
Well, like Josiah, I'm actually junior as well. I go to Westland High School. This contest, I was just scrolling through Facebook one day and it popped up as like a sponsored post, and I just clicked on it and I was like, oh, this seems interesting, and then I chose it.
Wow, amazing. Well, see, I guess social media is good. So, Mimi?
There you go.
So we thought we would have the two of you read your essays, and for your case, Chelsea, a poem.
Yes.
Okay, are you ready to read it?
Okay, should
sure.
I just...
Yeah.
Should I just start?
Yeah, or, just
okay.
So.
Mm-hmm. So my poem is called The Calculus of Conciliation. In primary school, we are taught that 2 plus 2 equals 4, and that 10 times 1 is 10. During middle school, we learned that y has a direct relationship with x, and the angles in a triangle add up to 180. Over high school, we progressed to where the derivative is 3 and the area under the curve is 6. But then, why aren't we ever taught that people plus guns equals death, and that people minus food equals starvation, and that anger times fear equals chaos, and that violence never equals peace? It's simple, really. I mean, if 3 plus 5 equals 8, and if the slope of the line is 6, and if I'm not losing my goddamn mind, then why is it so hard to teach reality? Reality is not the arbitrary calculation of numbers. What I think is that schools should teach us that people minus guns equals security, and that people plus voices equals advocacy, and that people times love equals compassion, and that harmony always equals peace. Wake up, world. We don't need to learn the calculus of computation. It's time to teach the calculus of conciliation.
Thank you so much. Very powerful. I'm going to take this moment just to let it sink in. And Chelsea, tell us about how you developed this poem. Do you know? Can you explain to us how it developed, or what some of your processes in terms of writing this, creating this?
Well, okay, so similar to Josiah, I also really like writing, but for me, writing doesn't come like snap at the finger. Like, I have to actually think through. It takes me a long time to even write one thing. I can write one line, and then 3 months later, I go back to it.
Yes.
And then if I lose interest, then I don't write it anymore. But if I'm still interested, then I might write it. For this one, I think, when I was just reading the website, it said that you could any kind of form of written medium. So it didn't have to be like an essay, because I don't do well with essays. And so I was like, oh, a poem would be easier. And I write like a lot of spoken word at school. And so I feel like I just came up with this, like, you know how you see like t-shirts where it's like, people plus sleep equals happiness or something like that. Yes. Like the kind of cheesy ones, but then I kind of wanted to incorporate that somehow in my writing, so that's why I came up with lines like how people plus guns is like death and stuff like that.
Yes. Wow, amazing. Thank you. Thank you. Mimi, I'm going to put you on the spot right now. What was it about Chelsea poem that resonated with the committee?
The poem resonated with us. We were talking about activism and peace and changing the world, and we just had so many incredible entries, and we were very serious and spent a lot of time going back and forth and back and forth, and we finally, you know, felt that Chelsea's poem answered concepts of what needs to be, you know, the role of education in creating a more peace and justful world. And we felt that over time, the things that inspire people to make change are the things that get people out there and, you know, wanting to make a difference are songs and poems and artwork. And so we just felt that, you know, we all got goosebumps when we read that poem, and we got goosebumps the second time and the third time, and we read it a lot, and we read it out loud, and we all took turns reading it, and so we kept coming back to it. But it was a really tough decision, but it was just so inspiring and so moving. It just stood out.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you. And if you're listening, and you are, because you're hearing our voices, you're listening to KBOO FM. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott, and this morning we're speaking with recipients of the Greenfield Peace Writing
Contest.
Mm-hmm. Sponsored by the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. We're speaking with Chelsea Ling and Josiah Taylor. And they will receive their award at an event this Friday.
That's right.
And tell us, where is that again?
That's Friday the 24th at 6 p.m. It starts at 6 p.m. at the Eco Trust building downtown. And it's open to the public, so you're welcome to come and bring your friends and family and prepare to be inspired. It's a great event.
Excellent. Thank you. And Josiah.
Yeah.
You wrote an essay, and Why don't you read it for us right now?
For sure. Before I do, I'd like to say about Chelsea's poem that I didn't notice it the first time, but I really like how there's sort of the parallels drawn between mathematics and then this mathematics of intangible things, or this mathematics of, like, real-life things, because math is, you know, the language of the universe. So it's pretty cool. I'll read my essay. It's called Education's Role in Creating a Just and Peaceful World. Over the last few thousand years, humans have become the dominant species on Earth, playing the central role in all events and orchestrating reality in ways comparable to the ancient gods. Modern humanity clothes the planet, and nothing remains unaffected by our plight. Each day of existence marks another revolution of the living experiment we seem to be, in which mere animals strive for more than survival, but fulfillment too. This has brought us to a strange point, where one can look around and see two different worlds, the Earth itself, enigmatic, beautifully fractal, alive, and the human world, anything manifested from our minds. Our methods are so effective that our world is becoming exponentially larger than the natural one, for good or ill. How did this happen? Once we were indistinguishable from regular primates, but even before tools, we were on a track towards sentience, as our primary asset for survival was our brain. Some accredit our success to intelligence. That's only partially so. Chimps, elephants, and dolphins are all intelligent, self-aware animals, but if that was all it took, they would already be on a path toward higher consciousness. What's special about humans is a tradition we use in tandem with technology, society, and language, which allows us to leap ahead over time. That tradition is education. Education takes place among other animals, but with humans, there's a striking difference. Using creativity and language, we've built a system of accumulating information which acts as a superconscious for humanity, independent of any individual. Though everyone someday dies, the combined experience of us all is carried on, just as every cell of the body dies and regrows many times over while the mind remains constant. The superconscience of humanity continues to grow so long as we remain, or so long as the species remains. Education is many things, from instructor and pupil to the monk seeking answers in meditation to a toddler learning to speak by mimicry. It's a collection and propagation of knowledge that fills our lives. It's history, math, philosophy, and science. Everything we do, everything we are, is because of this, because of education. Through education, we are allowed this life of infinite potential, where we can understand everything. We already have the knowledge to create a peaceful world. All that holds us back from that, from compassion for all life, is ourselves. It's imperative we realize this. Our growth without limits has been unchallenged for centuries. As a result, we've grown more powerful than wise. With power, we've developed a schizophrenic personality involving wasteful, often insane treatment of ourselves and the planet. Interlaced in economics and religion is the assumption that we are somehow more important, more deserving of life than our earthly kin. This is evidenced from the Holocaust of livestock, to the ease with which we gut the planet of resources, to our automatic tendency to kill bugs and rodents that near us for the sole reason of getting them away. To imagine being treated with such contempt is scary. Which is not to say we're evil, but within humanity there is an abundance of destructive behavior. Just as we can create harmony and beauty, we create misery and disaster. From the Garden of Eden to nuclear warfare and every stop between, we're a massive power to be applied in any way to the universe. Using our ability to learn, dream, and care, we can create a cornucopia future for the whole Earth. Otherwise, our energies will be expended on whatever urges come along. Education isn't just a way for us, it's our way, the human way. How we use it today determines everything.
Thank you, Josiah. You packed a lot in that short one-page essay, and tell me something about the process of writing for you in this essay in particular.
Well, you know, generally for me, I write very organically, you know. I can't stick to a schedule or anything. I really kind of write when I'm inspired. And with this essay, you know, I don't really like writing essays a whole lot because I tend to write fiction, but this essay, you know, I didn't even approach it like a regular five paragraph essay. It's not five paragraphs. I approached it really like a creative essay. And with that, I was able to sort of, you know, dabble over it for a few months, and I rewrote it a few times, but every single time I noticed that these same sort of themes were coming out. And so I drew, you know, the best parts out of every version of the essay, basically. And, you know, sort of, this is what we have here, basically. I feel like every paragraph is just from a different essay.
Yes. Powerful. Very powerful. Mimi, anything about
this? I think you can see with just Chelsea and Josiah's readings how powerful the entries we had were this year and what a difficult decision it was to pick winners. I mean, these young people are absolutely incredible. So, yeah. Last sentence I read over and over again. It was really powerful for me, so I just want you to know that.
Thank you. I definitely, you know, the reason it's the last sentence is because it's probably everything in here I hope is true, but I think it's one of the truest things about it, that how we use anything today determines everything. It's not about tomorrow, it's about today.
Excellent. And you're listening to K-Boo. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott. If you'd like to share your thoughts or questions with our guests, give us a call at 503-231-8187 or email us at moretalkradio@gmail.com. Our guests this morning are Josiah Taylor and Chelsea Ling. Both are recipients of the Greenfield Peace Writing Scholarship Contest, sponsored by the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. Also joining us this morning is Mimi Bernal Graves, who was the lead judge for this year's contest and is a board member of PSR. There's one other recipient who was unable to be here this morning, and Mimi has graciously offered to read it for us. Tell us the name of the recipient, and could you read the essay for us, Mimi?
Yes, this is Everett Summers, and he is in Springfield, and I probably won't do it as much justice as the writer would, but I will do my best. It is called 2015 GPWS Greenfield Peace Writing Scholarship Entry Number 61. I don't have the exact title for this one. When we judge, everything is sent to us anonymously with no identifying information, so there's no bias. So here we go. One of the simplest interpretations of peace is that it is exclusively the absence of war, although they are generally accepted as distinct opposites. Many activists, scholars, philosophers, and educators argue peace to be a multifaceted phenomenon, a harmony among humankind that goes beyond simple nonviolence. Joanne Galting, a Norwegian sociologist and mathematician who contributed to the notion of peace as a multidimensional concept, in 1964 he introduced his idea of the components of peace categorized by negative peace, or simply the absence of overt violence, and positive peace, involving the presence of moral values such as harmony, equality, justice, and the integration of society. Dr. Maria Montessori, widely recognized for her establishment of the Montessori method, was one of the first to propose the concept of peace education. In her writings, including Education and Peace, she communicated her belief in education as a means for creating peace by incorporating core values such as global citizenship, personal responsibility, and respect for diversity as crucial components of educational curriculum. Peace is a goal that can only be obtained through common accord, and the means to achieve this unity for peace are twofold. First, an immediate effort to resolve conflicts without recourse to violence, and second, a long-term effort to establish lasting peace among men. Montessori's theories on peace education suggest that incorporating these values along with peaceful solution tactics must be done through explicit instruction as well as consistent model behavior. The ideologies surrounding peace, as well as peace education, vary throughout the world and appear to be continually evolving. Since Montessori's introduction, peace education has grown in worldwide recognition and been adopted by many educators. Although focusing on a wide range of topics and educational tactics, the core objective of peace education programs appears to be consistent with enforcing the notion that schools hold the capability, and responsibility to provide an environment that promotes the same values emphasized in the teachings of Montessori. This supports the idea that the role of education in creating and sustaining a peaceful world involves the existence of a community cultivated upon respect for one another, the vital aspects of which include cooperation, tolerance, and understanding, which are most easily accessible through socialization in the classroom. To some, peace remains an indefinable and elusive concept, an enigmatic and unrealistic ideal. The UNICEF 1996 State of the World Children Anti-War Agenda says, disputes may be inevitable, but violence is not. To prevent continued cycles of conflict, education must seek to promote peace and tolerance, not feel hatred and suspicion. In order to be successful in building and maintaining a peaceful world, we must look first at what we are teaching the youngest generations. Raising a community built upon mutual and universal trust is the first step towards achieving a more just world. By encouraging forgiveness and unconditional respect, rather than promoting fear and intolerance, we are investing hope in the children of the future and paving a path to perpetual peace.
Thank you. And that essay was by Everett Summers, who is a student at Springfield Academy of Art and Academics. And I'll let you thank you for reading that, Mimi. Three different writings, a poem by Chelsea, a creative essay by Josiah, and a more essay mm-hmm. with footnotes mm-hmm. by Everett. Three different ways that they approached it. It's amazing.
It is. And this variety was seen throughout the entries. So they're just so creative and inspiring. It was amazing.
Amazing. Well, we have a couple of callers, and let's go to Joe. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. I was calling first in response to Josiah's essay, and then I started to hear the last one being read, and it kind of feeds my thought, and that has to do with how not all education is the same. There is lots of education that inculcates negative values that prepares us for warlike tendencies, and not all of those warlike tendencies are obvious in the sense of people being outwardly violent or being intolerant of differences. In today's world, and these young people know it more than anyone else, there is this notion of career readiness and being ready to be participating in a competitive global economy. And I was wondering what thoughts they have about how to challenge that set of values, which tries to sneak in the warlike under the auspices of what is the natural way of things. And I can take my answer off of the air.
Okay, hold on first, but I want to make sure we got your question. Let you think about that and respond. Who wants to respond first? Okay, Josiah.
It seems like basically you're trying to ask if there's a way that we can root out the general warlike tendencies that aren't specifically war, like, for instance, warlike tendencies with capitalism, how, you know, it's all about competition and stuff like that. I think that, you know, it all comes from individuals, you know, I really like the line, think globally, act locally, because that pretty much defines what anyone can do. We're all pretty much powerless in a globalized world unless we're, you know, thinking of things as if we're an ant in an ant, in an ant hive, where we're all doing a small part to fix it. And, you know, that's really a change in ideals. You know, it's not like you can do one thing to change the whole world. You got to really change it slowly and bit by bit.
Okay. Chelsea, any thoughts?
Well, okay, so first off, in, like, Chinese philosophy, there's, like, two main beliefs. There's one where humans are intrinsically evil, and there's one that says that humans are intrinsically good. I prefer to think on the good side, and so I think it's more of, like, the kind of way that, like, how you grow up, like, what kind of atmosphere you grow up in, like, if your parents are nice, like, if you have good food, good housing, if you can afford things and stuff like that, it kind of shapes who you are. And then I'm not saying that people that live up in more impoverished areas will become bad people, but they might be prone to, like, act violently to be able to gain all these, like, basic human necessities. And like Josiah said, we can't just think for ourselves. Like, humans at our very best, we're still actually animals. We aren't, like, better than anyone else. And if animals can even act together to work towards a common goal, then I don't know what we're doing here right now, because it seems like in our world today, a lot of humans, like, you hear about dictators and people like that, they only keep working for themselves. They don't care about other people because they see other people as animals, while forgetting that they themselves are the same thing. And we aren't inherently better than any animal. We're just more advanced because we've actually utilized education and stuff like this. And so that's, like, my own take on this. You have to learn to be, like, you have to learn to, it's not learn to be good, but you have to grow up in a place where people like encourage, like, good behaviors and good morals. And even if you don't live up in an area like this, you can still develop, like, a good personality and then good intrinsic qualities to make you a better human.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Joe, for the question. And just Josiah, you wanted to add?
Well, you know, I really think it's interesting what you say about Chelsea, about, you know, basically it has to do with where you grow up, because, you know, I think that there's no such thing as good or bad, and it's almost a little bit of the other side of the coin of what you've been saying. But I can agree that, like, however you're brought up, whether it's in a good environment or in a bad environment, it doesn't actually really matter, because you can choose and you can develop the ways that you learn based on certain stimuli, you know? Like, if I touch the stove, I can either think that's a bad experience because my hand got burned, or I can learn from the experience. And that's how every experience is, so.
Okay. Okay, we have another call. LJ, good morning.
Hey, Cecil, how are you?
I am well, thank you.
Good deal. I got a couple of things to throw into the mix. Okay, as we all know, the capitalist paradigm is extremely, how can I put this in a nice way, exploitive. So it totally exploits nature. All right, so as we know, right now we have a honeybee die-off. That's alarming, thanks to the pesticide with the nicotine component brought to us by our friends from Monsanto. The monarch butterfly die-off, thanks to Monsanto's Roundup for killing milk thistle, which monarch butterflies depend on. All right. And I want to get your reaction about that. And then a recommended read called Pedagogy of the Oppressed by Paulo Freire.
It's a great book.
I'm sorry?
That's a great book.
Yeah, tell me about it. I know. About Paulo Freire. And I just want to leave you one more thing about our system. Are we educated or are we schooled? And I'll take my answers off the air and have a really nice day. Keep on keeping on and happy 420, you guys.
Okay. Bye-bye. Well, thanks. Thank you. Chelsea, any responses? Mimi, he mentioned pedagogy of the oppressed. And you're an educator, are you not?
Yeah. I am. I work in the professional development department of Kaiser right now, mm-hmm. in healthcare, and I have my master's degree in education, and that was a required reading in my program at PSU. It was a great book. I think I'm gonna echo what Josiah said about, you know, think globally, act locally, which is part of the reason I got involved with PSR. I know it's Physicians for Social Responsibility. I'm not a physician, but I'm a concerned citizen, and I really appreciate the work that they do in the community. And it might not directly affect, you know, the question of the caller about Monsanto and the bees dying off and the monarch butterflies, but, you know, we have worked to make hospital foods in the cafeterias more regional, more local, and, you know, you take that concept and you're working with local people to get them off of the dependence of, you know, monocultures like Monsanto or needing pesticides and more regional and local foods, supporting the economy more locally and supporting better infrastructure, less carbon footprint, less transport, and just healthier food for people. Mm-hmm. So when you think globally but act locally and you do what Josiah was saying, you know, you're that small little ant, but if you get with a bunch of other small little ants who have the same ideas as you, you can change those things. And when you change those things locally, it can become statewide, and then it can become, you know, national, and then it can become global. And I think the comment the caller made about are we educated or are we schooled, again, I think what Chelsea and Josiah were saying is true too. You know, we have choices and we have resources, and making sure that people have access to those and have access to education to further their knowledge and make choices that they think are right, you know, for the world. So that's a good question.
Thank you. You're listening to KBOO FM. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott. Our number is 503-231-8187. And you have been listening to two winners of the Greenfield Peace Writing Scholarship. And they are Chelsea Lynn and Josiah Taylor. Oh, I had a brain freeze for a moment. Okay. Let's go to our next caller. James, good morning.
Good morning. Hey, so I definitely appreciate listening to these young folks who have such good heads on their shoulders. I mean, this is you guys are right on. I mean, you know, the Chelsea talking about the, you know, Matt, I don't know, it's like the abstract the abstract thing about comparing, like, humanity to mathematics. I mean, there's no amount of, you know, there's no amount of mathematics that can, you know, that can change. Humanity is just, humanity has just been lost in all this progress that we've made, and I really appreciate how you made that that correlation. And Josiah, definitely with your insight about how we feel that we all this progress without limits because we feel like we're more deserving of any other life form on the planet is it's something that people never really actually touch on, but they say a lot. You know, I grew up in the church, and you know, it's, you know, when you come from a monotheist background, it's really easy to think, well, God created us to be superior or to give us dominion over everything. But you realize the more we try to create dominion over the planet, the more the planet diminishes.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. you know, we definitely need to return to more of a cyclical way of being rather than trying to think that we can just save ourselves with more technological progress. So yeah, I just let you guys know you guys are right on, and I really appreciate what you're talking about. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our numbers again are 503-231-8187. And if you want to read these essays, you can go to KBOO website, and there's a link on our program, or go to Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility mm-hmm. website, and you can read the essays there. Let's go to our next caller. Annalisa, good morning.
Good morning. And thank you young folk, your guests, because young folk are the future, and we can only demand the best education and information for our youth. And when one caller mentioned the collapse of bee colonies, I was able, with the help of a beekeeper, to rescue a swarm of bees that was clustered at a small apartment building and was pointed out to me, and the landlord has called an exterminator to I got hold of a beekeeper, and within 10 minutes he was there and rescued the bee swarm. And then I got 2 beehives in my backyard, and just last week they had multiplied so much that there was another bee swarm from those 2 beehives, and he rescued those, of course. They were in my own backyard, and he took those 2 and put them in a beehive. And I think that's how we slowly but surely can maybe rescue bee swarms and educate our people and young folk on that too, how important bees are. But and then when it comes to education, I'm from the Netherlands, and Maria Montessori started one of her schools there in the Netherlands, and education is the utmost priority in the Netherlands, and I think we have to aim for that here too. So thank you, and I will try and read those essays and poems. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
I really think it's interesting about how you were able to rescue your bees instead of killing them. I've never met someone who rescues the bees that nest in their house. Almost everybody just kills them. I think that's, you know, that's the perfect mentality. Like, you know, a lot of people, they try to kill blackberry bushes, and they'll use machines to do it. But then I've seen people who will hire, you know, teams of goats to just eat through them. And like, that's a much better way of approaching the problem. And it actually, you know, it helps the goats, it helps the world by not, you know, putting pollution or as much pollution in the air. Yeah. And like, it's just, you got to think of different solutions to your problems.
Chelsea, your poem was titled The Calculus of Conciliation. How do you think we can bring different groups together, whether It's different groups in school, different nations. What is that calculus? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I haven't really thought about this yet, but no. I'm thinking that if people, we have to like unite for a common goal. We can't just keep going on like our own ways to do things. Like how, if we go back to like what we consider like animals,
yes.
Animals at their very basic instinct, the one thing that we all want to do is just to survive, to have food, to have water, to live, to be able to reproduce, to be able to die with actually leaving offspring on the earth. And then humans, we also started out that same way, but then somewhere along the line, the light bulb went off, and then we became more educated, more schooled, and we became more knowledgeable, and then that's how we kind of advanced over other animals. And so,
and when you said knowledgeable, you use air quotes. So
yeah, thank you. Yeah, knowledgeable with air quotes. And then so, then instead of just our, and then while we were doing these things, we also developed like technologies and stuff like that, and then that furthered our goals of like basic survival. But then in the end, now like 2015, everyone has their own goal. We don't have like a united common goal to bring peace or all to survive without like killing off the earth. Everyone has a goal that has already surpassed the basic survival instinct level. Like someone might have the goal of like, I want to make $1 million this year, or I want to get this dream job. You don't worry about being able to bring enough food to the table or being able to pay for your water bill like most of the people in the world. So we have like a small population of people that we just keep trying to go higher and higher and higher. And we tend to forget that we need to turn around and look at the other people behind us. And we are supposed to pull them along with us, but then we're just leaving them behind. And then so in the end, that's how like the gap between like the rich and the poor has like greatly increased, because the people in the front forget about the people in the back. And so as a species, that's kind of like an aspect of our failure. We haven't been able to all unite and then pull everyone together to advance at the same rate. And so we just forget about the people. And like how what we consider animals, everyone works together. Everyone works together to be able to, like bees, to like nurture like a colony, and then to like make honey, and then to reproduce, to live, to pollinate. But then humans, we just forget that overall, even though we might be one of the most widespread species across the world, we should all unite for some kind of common goal that brings some kind of common good to everyone.
One thing were you about to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, Chelsea, I think it's very interesting that you used the word species and you didn't talk about different cultures and different people. I think that's really powerful because we are one, you know, we are one global community. And I think that imagery and that word that you chose to use in your answer is very powerful.
Yes. I think one thing that I observed from your essays and also from your comments today to follow up is the sort of like the recognitions that both of you make in terms of humanity's role in the earth and the connections with other species and with the animal kingdom. And part of what I think I heard is when we try to separate ourselves, that's when things become more difficult.
Yeah, when you look at it realistically speaking, you cannot scientifically separate, you know, us from a different kind of animal. There's three forms of life on Earth: plants, animals, and, you know, microbial organisms. So when you look at it that way, you really got to sort of account for this divide that you see between humans and the rest of the animals. And we like to account for it by just calling ourselves different. But what I really think is it's a difference between our experience and their experience, because no one knows what it's like to be an animal. We only know what it's like to be a human. So, for instance, you know, we say animals act mostly on instinct and we think that we have free will. But I would say that we act on instinct because the thoughts that come to us from the very pit of our brain that tell us what to do, that we don't even really question, I would call that our instinct. That's the same exact thing that the animal is responding to. You know, we like to abstractify things, and like most of our goals are abstract. Like Chelsea was saying, you know, I want, you know, money, or I want fame, or I want to be loved by a lot of people. You know, we don't have very tangible goals. We don't want, you know, food on the table, a place to sleep. We think that we deserve that off the get-go, which, you know, oh, and that's another element, you know, deserving. We think that we deserve things when deserving is a complete human invention. You know, it's the concept that this belongs, or that I should have this. And there's you know, that's along the lines of believing in, you know, manifest destiny. You know, it's like, if I'm meant to have anything, then I don't know.
Yeah,
you
know? Grab it and take it. You're listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. We are speaking with Josiah Taylor and Chelsea Lin, both recipients of the Greenfield Peace Writing Scholarship. They're award presentation is this Friday at EcoTrust, and what time is that again, Mimi?
It's 6 p.m. and that's 721 Northwest 9th Avenue.
And our numbers are 503-231-8187. We have about 9 minutes. If you would like to share your thoughts or comments with our guests, please give us a call at 503-231-8187. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 is the OMO Variety Hour. Bill Resnick's interview, Michael Armstrong of Portland's Bureau of Planning and Sustainability on local efforts to combat climate change. Joe Clement talks with an organizer with the Portland Solidarity Network on renters' issues, and Todd Sloan offers some thoughts on how and why it is necessary to overcome factionalism on the left. Thanks, KBOO member, for your generous support. Are you not a current member? Well, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Chelsea and Josiah, both of you are juniors, so you're approaching the end of a very long education track. And so as you looking back, what do you think was the best in terms of your education experience? What is it that you think that what are some things that you gained from your education experience that you will take with you in the future? And are there things that were totally useless? Give you a second to think. Chelsea?
Well, in my own personal opinion, like a lot of things that we learn in school, they might not actually help with what you want to do when you grow up. For instance, like a lot of the math classes that I took before now, I kind of felt that they were kind of useless. And a few of the science classes that were like required classes in our school were also kind of like useless, because I don't even want to go in a field that is similar to that. Actually, like one of the biggest education things that I think actually impacted me the most was probably last summer when I had the chance to go to an international camp, and it was science policy and innovation. And so it was a group of about 200 students from around 80 countries, and we just all gathered together for 2 weeks, and we discussed, and we listened to lectures from professors, and then we went into like our own groups and we discussed things like this, and we made our own presentations. The biggest goal was probably around like climate change and stuff like that. But then we had our own like little interline presentations with how we dealt with things like this. And I think it was really interesting. I made a lot of friends there, in particular like one boy from Pakistan. And then so we kept in touch over Facebook. And then it was actually kind of scary because we were all in a group chat together. And one day he was telling us about the bombings and the violence that were happening near his city back in Pakistan. And everyone in the group chat was obviously extremely worried for him. But he was actually okay. He was considered, he was probably one of the more affluent people in that area. He wasn't really affected, but I think it just kind of opened up, at least for me, like the scary reality of our world today. And I've grown up in a fairly affluent community. Like Westland is one of the richer communities in Oregon. And so I consider it's a luxury for me to live there. But I also consider myself kind of unlucky in the way that I'm not able to understand like people's plights around the world. I can't understand water shortage. I can't understand like the fear that you have when you don't have enough food on the table simply because I haven't experienced it. And I probably won't because you're born in like the high class. And you kind of, unless you screw up really big, you stay in the high class. You can't really luck, unless you like screw up really big and you fall down, you're not really gonna see how other people have to live, how the majority lives. Like, you live on, how people live on, like, just their income, like, their bare minimums. They buy exactly what they need. They can't buy more. They can't buy less, because if they buy more, they can't afford it. If they buy less, they'll probably not be able to survive. So I think that's, in my own personal opinion, kind of things that I wish I kind of was able to experience would be more of understanding people's hardships, because you can watch documentaries, you can watch TV, you can hear the radio, you can read books about all of these things, you can educate yourself on the plight of humanity, but you can't really fully understand it until you actually begin to experience it or know people that experience it, and you can start feeling how they feel.
Yes, wow, powerful. And we only have 4 minutes left, so you open up a very good topic of conversations. So, Sai, do you have any thoughts?
Well, did you want to hear about my impression of schooling and education in general?
And if you could do it in 2 minutes.
For sure. That would be great. You know, I really think that most of what Chelsea said is really true. You know, especially... you know, I think with education, like, school is important, and you can learn a lot in school, but school isn't everything. Most of what I've learned in life that's been important has been on my own and through seeking things that I'm interested in. I love science, I love astrophysics, I love writing, stuff like that, you know, and I've sought those out myself. The way the school system is designed in this country is very machinistic, and I think it honestly, it makes people hate learning. And that's actually, it's very negative. Because I talk to most kids these days, and they don't like learning, they don't like education, they don't see the value in it, and it's really sad. And I think that comes from the fact that they don't enjoy school, and that school kind of shoves these certain things down their throat. I wish that school was designed, you know, more practically, and that it taught us things that would help us live our life in the world, as opposed to, you know, things that supposedly apply that don't really apply. I'm a junior, and I'll be honest, I haven't learned hardly anything that'll actually help me as an adult.
Yeah, wow. Thank you, Josiah. Thank you, Chelsea. We've been speaking with two incredible leaders here in our community who share some of their thoughts with the Greenfield Committee, and they will receive their awards this Friday at EcoTrust, 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. And I encourage you to read their essays and be inspired. The theme for this year's essay was taken from a quote from Malala, the 2014 Nobel Peace Prize writer. One child, one teacher, one pen, and one book can change the world. Education is the only solution. Education first. And they spoke about what they thought was the role of education. Thank you for joining us this morning. Give you 30 seconds, last word to share with the audience. Chelsea, any wisdom more to impart?
Does that wisdom have to do with like a certain topic or just in general?
Just in general, you know, this is your moment.
My moment. Probably to be able to wake up every day happy knowing where you are, like, especially if you're able to afford a lot of different things, just wake up, be happy.
Okay.
If the sun's shining, like, it's a great day. Even if the sun isn't shining, it's still going to be a great day.
Okay.
Just live life to the fullest and be thankful for what you have.
Thank you. Josiah?
Well, I'd like to say first, thanks for having me. And I guess my most important thing would be make your goal to be happy, because that's the most important thing. And everything else falls after.
Wow. Thank you both. I am encouraged. Please look at the Oregon Physician for Social Responsibility website to read their essays and join them this Friday at EcoTrust. Thank you all of you for being with us.
KBOO Monday, April 27th through Friday, May 2nd from noon to 4, and Saturday and Sunday, May 2nd and 3rd from noon to 5 p.m. to hear our live broadcast from the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, brought to you by our friends and colleagues at WWOZ in New Orleans. We'll have access to 5 stages of fantastic traditional and contemporary New Orleans jazz and blues, brass bands, and interviews and commentary by the best that WWOZ has to offer. That's the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, starting Monday, April 27th. The weekdays, we'll broadcast it from noon to 4 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday, May 2nd and 3rd, we'll broadcast the festival from noon to 5 p.m., here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Sex Workers film series hosted by the Clinton Street Theater. This month, the film A Kiss for Gabriella will be shown Tuesday, April 21st at 7 p.m. Gabriella Lita is the first sex worker to run for Brazilian Congress. A Kiss for Gabriella tells the story of her 2010 campaign as she faces 822 opponents and challenges a male-dominated political system to see if a sex worker